Okay, well, hello everyone. My name is Stephen Downs, and I'm pleased to be speaking to all of you in Immenau, Germany, a city that I did not know existed until about 2 or 3 minutes ago. And hello to everyone who is connected on Mogulus. It's my pleasure to be doing a live stream as well. I have a very informal presentation planned, so I'm going to be speaking for maybe 15 minutes or so, and then we'll take it over to questions, commentary, discussion, etc. As this is an EduCamp, I want to stick as much as possible to the EduCamp kind of format, and the EduCamp kind of format is a format where we keep things pretty informal, we keep things relaxed, we don't worry about staying on the official presentation or anything like that. So that's basically my plan. I do have some prepared comments, so we can do those. And then, as I say, we'll go to comments and questions. And I'm working with a brand new computer here, folks, so you may have to give me a little bit of leeway here. I've got various things set up here that I'm trying to make all work. And why is it doing that? There we go. Sorry, I'm just adjusting my sound as well. Something is auto-adjusting my sound, and it shouldn't be. And it's not Skype, because I've told it not to. So, okay. So, what I want to talk about, basically, is the work that I've been doing over the last year. Of course, this is my third EduCamp in a row, year over year, and I keep getting asked back, which is always a bit of a surprise to me. The work that I've been doing basically is, as you may know, focusing around e-learning 2.0, providing online learning in a network setting, providing online learning in a web 2.0 setting. The way I like to situate this, and I've been forced to think about this a little bit because, you know, a lot of work is being done in other areas of online learning. A lot of work is being done in areas like games and simulations and such. And I think it's important to keep in mind that learning using Web 2.0 technologies does not compete against learning using games or simulations. Rather, learning using a game or a simulation or event like this, such as a live presentation or even an in-person presentation, these kinds of learning are episodic, while learning using Web 2.0 technologies is not episodic. It's more like a background. It's more like, I don't want to say noise because that's not really the sort of word that I want to use, but the idea here is that the discussions and the conversations that take place in the Web 2.0 environment form this context into which these episodic learning events are placed. And so the idea here is that the two ought to quite properly feed off of each other, one off of the other. So the episodic learning feeds into the online discussion, and then the online discussion feeds into the episodic learning. So, with that as a context or a background, I want to talk a bit as well about the need for using this sort of learning in the first place. Again, because if we look at games and we look at simulations, games and simulations are planned. Games and simulations are prepared ahead of time. And this is true of traditional online learning as well, where our coursework, our materials are all planned ahead of time. And this is going to be useful and appropriate in cases where we have content that we know we want people to learn. If we have pre-described processes, if we have, if you will, facts of a particular domain. However, in many cases, we don't know what it is that we actually want to teach people. And you know, it's occurred to me recently that our discussions haven't really looked at that aspect of things. But right now, our environment is dynamic, it is changing every day, and moreover, the material that we're attempting to teach people is inherently complex. There are no simple generalizations we can make about the material. The material itself changes depending on an individual's point of view. Consequently, we can't sit down and say at the start of the day, we are going to teach these people X. Rather, we don't know what it is we're going to teach people. We might have a general idea. We might have some idea of some resources that might be useful that we can feed into the system. But we don't know, literally, what it is that we want to teach people, because the environment will have changed, because the environment will be complex. So consequently, what we need in such a situation is a learning environment that itself learns, a learning environment that itself is sensitive to or capable of perceiving the domain over which it is intended to be a learning environment. And this is a big reason why I've adopted the network model of learning. The idea here is that the network is not useful simply for the distribution of learning. Rather, the network is also capable of acting as a perceiving device, of acting as an organizing device. The idea here is that each person who is connected to the network is not simply a recipient of knowledge and information from the network, but also acts as though they are like a little sensor, or maybe a big sensor, depends on the person, at the end of the network. And these people acting as sensors feed information into the network, feed their perceptions, their reactions, their experiences into the network. And so the network shifts and pulls and pushes and reshapes itself, and other people in the network create new content, manipulate old content. The whole network shifts to adapt to whatever it is being perceived by the people who are at the end of the network. So the network itself learns what it is in any given situation that it needs to teach. This is why we want to use a network like this as a backdrop to these episodic events. These episodic events, such as games, simulations, online discussions, in-person discussions, real-life experiences, these act as the sensory input for the network, and then the network reacts and reshapes and creates an interpretation of these real-life or in-person experiences. And in that way, we're able to create learning that is adaptive to the situation, learning that is appropriate to the context, and learning that makes sense of or provides a perspective or a theoretical basis for understanding the episodic events. So that's part of the theory and what I've been thinking about recently with respect to the theory behind a lot of the online learning that we've been talking about thus far. So in that context then, we move into e-learning and e-learning applications specifically. And as you know, e-learning applications represent a move toward this network form of learning, represent a shift, a decentralizing shift from things like learning management systems and that, where everything is planned ahead of time, to this sort of distributed system. And the work that I've been working on has focused on teaching and learning in this complex internet environment. Because when we look now, we want to look at what sort of environment, what sort of structure this network looks at, what sort of structure this network looks like. And this is a structure that by now is familiar to all of you. This is a structure that includes not simply destination websites and communities, but rather services of all sorts. And it's an environment that isn't based on web services, but rather a much looser assortment of standards and protocols. It's an environment where people have multiple home pages, and I would put the home pages in quote. They have their own blog, they have their own Twitter account, they have their own YouTube account, they have their own Flickr account. So a person's individual presence online today is distributed. So even a single individual will have a network of resources. And it's in this context, with these thoughts in mind, that George Siemens and I last year put together our online connectivism course. And I want to talk a little bit about the connectivism course that we set up. The idea here was to create an open, distributed online course, a course that would be based not on a single destination, but rather a course that would be structured as the network that I've just been describing. And so that's what we built. And then when we built it, when we set it up, we announced it on our respective mailing lists, and the important thing as well to us was to make this course an open course. And we had some students sign up at the University of Manitoba, but by and large, the course was open, and as a consequence, we got 2,200 people sign up for the course. And these 2,200 people came from all over the world. They came from Canada, United States, Europe, Australia, South America, and the rest. And what happened in this course was that the participants in the course basically created a network. Now, I'm just going to turn this around. Let me see how this works. And I have to wait a few seconds for it to show up here. Oh, wait, I can look at it right away and see how that's looking. Video settings. Well, that's not so hot, is it? Yeah. People waving. Come on, show me my video. It's not showing me my video. Stupid Skype. Probably because I'm in a call, so it's not going to show me what my video looks like in my call. Oh, okay, right, okay. So, so here's the course. I would really wish I could see my video. I don't know why it's not showing me my video at all here. Oh, there we go. That's. Oh, I want it bigger. Oh, there we go. Unbelievable. Struggling a little bit with this Skype application. It has a thing to expand the video. I expand the video and then it pops back down. So that's not very useful. All right. Anyhow, here's the course. This is the online course. This is the site administration screen. And I'm going to pop in here. And I want to show you what they've done. There we go. What I'm listing here are the feeds that were created by the students. And as you can see here, the students themselves created their own resources. So these feeds, and there's something like 170 of these feeds, represent individual blogs or other online spaces created by students to contribute material to the course. And so what I did is, for any given feed that a student created, and here we see a feed to student 2.0, I set up the system so that it would harvest that feed. So here's a post created by the person who owns this feed. And as you can see from all of the other feeds, and I'm just picking some at random, this person didn't create any posts. Don't you love the way you pick something at random and there's nothing in it? Here's Thirst for Knowledge. Here are the posts that this person created. These posts were aggregated or harvested using RSS from the original source. And then from that, what we did, and I'm just going to back up and all out of that here, is we created a newsletter. So it's a bit hard to see here, but this page. So the newsletter itself is a page, and here's the list of pages on the site, And then this is the daily is the name of the newsletter. And so we created this newsletter in RSS format. And this is the code that creates the newsletter. And of course, we sent it out every day. And when we view the generated version of the page, and of course it's not gonna, so I have to cheat a little bit here, but not much. There we go. And now it's just going to look kind of blank now because we haven't generated anything recently. But this, under ordinary circumstances, would look like an email newsletter that we would send out to everyone. We can look back at the archives of the course. And as you can see, I'll just pick again one of these at random here. This is an issue of the daily. The idea here is that the daily forms the threads that connected the different branches of the network that constituted this course. So here's the daily, and the first part of the daily consists of resources that George or I highlighted, and then the second part of the daily down here at the bottom, these are the resources that the students created as a part of their course. And I'll click on one of these things, and a recipient of the daily would go right to the blog post that the person created, in this case titled Lubricated Leapfrog and Into Overload. This was their contribution to the course. And the whole idea here is that we wanted to create a course that was composed of distributed materials. The idea here was that we would not have a course that was created out of one single learning management system, one single online application, but rather many different locations that would be connected together using this thread, using this connection of RSS. Now, I just want to look briefly at the application that I used in order to create this. The application is called Grasshopper. Here's its wonderful logo. And basically, the application is a system. It's also the system that I use to create my own newsletter. And for those of you who are interested, I've set up a demonstration site, demo.downs.ca. And I'll just log into that. So it's very simple, admin. Oops, I think it's capitalized. And let's hope this works. Brand new machine, so it's still offering. So, and then once you're in there, you can go to the site administration and you can actually have a look at this. Here's the harvester, and it harvests the feeds that are in the queue. If you want to list the feeds, I don't know why it's displaying these down here. Again, the perils of a new computer. There's only one feed that the demo version is harvesting, but if you wanted, you could create a new feed. You just enter the feed information here into the box, and then once the feed is in the list, you can actually harvest the feed. So here I'll harvest this feed. Now what we're doing is we're actually obtaining the posts via RSS from the remote site. There are ways, and I won't go into this in detail because I simply don't have time at this time, but there are ways to edit your page, and here's a page editing screen, edit your page in such a way that you can display the harvested content. So basically it's to using the keyword command and db equals link. That might actually work. I'll just update that. And you have to put it into the content, not the description. Sometimes I forget how I've done my own thing. So let's put it into here. We'll update the record. And then once we've updated it, it's a post. Sorry, I should be creating a page here, not a post. Code, paste, update record. Let's see what this will do. Oops, dang. Page 72. I have to fix that. That's the problem with messing around with your own software. Okay, it's what it's trying to do is display each of these links, but I have to set up a little template for it. So anyhow, I'm not going to mess with this in an unplanned way anymore, but again, because of time. But if you wanted, you could come in here and play with it. If you go to the Grasshopper site, which is grasshopper without an A, .downs.ca. Yo. Okay. So, all right. So I take it you didn't like that part. Okay, moving on. Okay, what I'm doing now is I'm working on something called the personal learning environment. Personal learning environment is intended to be a mechanism for supporting the harvesting, reworking, and feeding forward of these contents. The idea of a personal learning environment is that it is used to organize the content of your distributed websites across the internet. Here's a look at what the personal learning environment is structured like. I can't see the video here, so I'm just sort of experimenting. The idea here is that there's local materials and the idea is that you harvest content from multiple places over the internet, work with that content, remix it, repurpose it, aggregate it, and then feed it forward either on RSS feeds or on email newsletters or basically any other way that you want. We haven't considered all the ways that we are going to distribute learning materials online. I've lost my video again. I'm sure it's there somewhere. There it is. What else do I want to talk about? That's mostly what I want to talk about. Why don't I just stop here? Sorry, I kind of got thrown off there. And I'll take any comments and questions, and those will probably be more organized. I didn't realize that you were interested in PLEs specifically and wanted to talk on PLEs. So. Just faintly, yes. I can't make that out. The sound is garbled. Yeah. That's correct. It's a prototype PLE application. Yes. Well, that's what I tried to explain in the first part of the course. The idea of aggregating multiple sources of information like this is to create a network, and the point of creating a network is that you've created a system for learning that is not just a distribution tool, it's also a tool that receives input, receives perceptions and experiences from the learners that make up part of the network, and consequently the network is able to learn and to adapt to context as well as to simply distribute information. Oh, and okay, I'll summarize. And Pat, yes, I will summarize questions in the future. Sorry about that. I didn't realize you're not getting sound from the room. Well, one of the things that we found we had to do, and dang, I've forgotten exactly how the question was phrased. I'm trying to do too many things at once here. The question was related to the problem of information overload and therefore the need to contextualize the information to the learner. And what I wanted to point out is that in the connectivism course that I showed earlier, one of the things that we really had to emphasize at the beginning of the course, particularly in the light, and here I'm now referring to Pat Parcell's comments on the screen, particularly in the light of the huge volume of discussion that happened in the Moodle forum, is that we try to emphasize to students that you cannot actually read everything. And so the way this course is structured, what you, the student, will have to do is pick and choose those materials that are appropriate to you. And the picking and choosing of those materials is part of the educational process. And doing so creates a view or a perspective or a point of view that you as a learner have that is unique on this material. And it's from that perspective, from that view, that you then engage in the discussions and the conversations that make up the course. And it is these conversations that result in the contextualization of the learning material. Well, and that is what the mechanism of the course was intended to do. People who were in the course were able to read each other's blogs directly, and indeed often commented on each other's blogs directly. So there was no requirement of centralization in our course. The sole purpose of the Grasshopper software was to provide the initial link that allowed people to get connected into that network. But the idea here is that the network functions independently of the course software. And I forgot to state the question again. Sorry, Pat. I'm very surprised that you guys can't hear the sound from the room. They're asking in the room if there are any further questions. Go ahead. Yeah, Randy is writing here. He's trying to figure out the social dimension besides the educational one. And Randy, if you can elaborate on that, I would appreciate that. So we'll see what you're looking to find out here. And we have Pat Parcell saying, individual learners have to learn how to filter learning material. It is a need for learning and a goal in itself. And I quite agree. And I think that part of being educated in any discipline is not simply knowing the facts of the discipline. It's also knowing how to communicate within that discipline and how to approach information from the parameters of that discipline. And a big part of that is picking and choosing what's important from the perspective of that discipline. So I would certainly agree with what you're saying there. Now we have Pat saying at Randy, students build an online identity through the sharing process and results, surely. We're still waiting for Randy to respond. We'll see if there's no way to tell if he's typing at the moment. So, any other comments in the room? And we have no comments in the room. We have another thing online. How many examples are there of using these approaches in other academic disciplines other than technology and education? That's an excellent question. And the answer is, I don't know. My perception was that when George and I launched the Connectivism course, that it was unique, that there weren't other courses using these approaches in other academic disciplines, that if we were going to look for learning that was taking place in this manner, we would have to look outside the domain of education, outside the domain of institutions, and look at places like Yahoo groups or Google groups or other discussion lists where this learning is happening and has been observed to be happening. And of course, nobody sat down and counted how many instances of learning there are happening. Also, another good place to look is in the gaming communities. I wrote an article once for Innovate on a gaming community called Apotleon, and that's the community for the Civilization 4 online games, well, desktop and online game. And again, we see this sort of distributed learning taking place. Also, too, the software development community. Now, of course, that's not outside the discipline of technology and education. Nonetheless, people are learning software in very much a distributed manner in this way. And again, though, I haven't sat down and counted it. I don't know if there's a way of counting it even. I don't know if anybody can actually answer the question, how many examples, because a quantification doesn't make sense in this context. Pat saying CCK08 brought the informal to be part of the formal process, and I think that's quite true. Any other comments or questions? Okay, well, thanks, everyone, and I hope you enjoy your a good conference, and I'll talk to you again. Bye, everyone.